You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePrey, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. It wasn't so long ago that we were all aghast and our jaws hit the floor about the $11 million that Telstra CEO Sol Trujillo pocketed as part of his annual salary and bonus package. It was equated to the Prime Minister's salary of around $380,000. Well now, showing absolute contempt for the company's shareholders, Trujillo's salary will edge close to, or if not exceed, $20 million. Telstra shareholders delivered what amounted to a resounding vote of no confidence in their board of directors at the company's annual general meeting in Sydney last week. Two-thirds of the shareholders voted against the company's remuneration report. That's the one which includes hefty pay and perk rises for the chief executive Sol Trujillo. Among those who took offence at the size and structure of Mr. Trujillo's salary package was the Future Fund, the country's biggest investor, which owns 16.5% of Telstra. But the vote was non-binding, and so Telstra plans to do nothing at all to change the way it rewards its executives. Not bad for a company who blatantly goes around saying that what it's doing, or in most cases not doing, is in the interest of the shareholders. And given the Future Fund owns 16.5% of the company, you would think its opinion might count for something. Obviously not. In July 2005, when Sol Trujillo came to Australia from the United States and brought a few of his friends to run the company's largest technology company, Telstra's shares were at $5.06. They're now around $4.80. Now that's pretty simple arithmetic, and for the shareholders, they're simply saying he gets paid $11.8 million last year, and now we're looking at a salary that would be in excess of $20 million. They just can't see any justification for it.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Lydia Davis talks search with Tim Mayer from Yahoo in the United States. Google lets an Android on the loose. The telecommunications ombudsman receives record complaints. The battle for the broadband vote heats up, and Australia sees a surge in domain names. All that and more in Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the IT world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News.
Coonan wins brownie points for OECD broadband figures.
Tech stocks plunge under beleaguered US economy.
Target takes a violent video game off the shelves.
A grand jury indicts 17 on charges of identity theft.
And Facebook's CEO says the free ride is now over.
I'm Graham Callaghan.
And I'm Dr. Ron. Welcome to Tech Talk News.
Communications Minister Helen Coonan scored political points last week after the release of new OECD figures, which ranked Australia's broadband speeds at 9th in the world. The figures were released last week after opposition leader Kevin Rudd and Shadow Communications Minister Stephen Conroy made claims in October that Australia was the 36th worst broadband country and that speeds were among the slowest in the world. The statistics rank Australia 9th in terms of speeds offered by incumbent telecommunications operators and in terms of average download speeds. Smart House News noted that there is still a massive difference between the speeds offered by Australia and leading broadband nations such as Japan. Helen Coonan claimed last week that Australia's rise to 9th spot from 16th was very embarrassing for Labor leader Kevin Rudd, but opposition telecommunications spokesman Stephen Conroy said that the minister directed the ACCC to stop collecting broadband statistics earlier this year, and that the OECD was left to base its findings on estimates provided by the department, resulting in Australia leapfrogging up the broadband rankings.
Technology stocks plunged in the United States last week as investors sought relief from lending and housing pressures weighing on the economy. Cisco Systems took a 9.5% beating after its CEO, John Chambers, warned that weakening demand among major customers, including banks saddled with huge home loan losses, would probably slow the company's growth. Heavyweights Google and Apple were also affected, with Apple shares down nearly 10% at one point and Google losing up to 7.5%. Other prominent losers included Oracle, Amazon.com, eBay and Hewlett-Packard. While deepening concerns in the banking and real estate sectors had recently driven investors to turn to technology companies, the poor performance in home loans and investments appeared to be having a flow-on effect to tech stocks.
Target Corporation said the video game Manhunt 2 had been removed from its stores last week due to particularly gruesome content that could be unlocked by hackers. Manhunt 2 by Rockstar Games is a first-person action game for PlayStation portables, in which two prisoners embark on a bloody rampage after escaping from a mental asylum. While the game is rated mature by the Entertainment Software Rating Board, it took hackers only 24 hours to unlock the PSP version of the game, disclosing additional violent and gruesome imagery. The imagery was intentionally hidden by Rockstar Games after the first version of Manhunt 2 received an adults-only rating. Ratings Board President Patricia Vance said the board is standing behind Manhunt 2's mature rating, noting the difficulty of unlocking the offending content.
A grand jury in the United States last week indicted 17 people on charges of identity theft, trafficking stolen credit card numbers, and internet crime. The 173 charges were filed after a two-year investigation. Prosecutors will allege the defendants trafficked more than 95,000 stolen credit card numbers and undertook more than $4 million in credit card fraud. The investigation by federal authorities in the United States involved the movement of more than $35 million through electronic payment service Western Express International.
And in controversial news for fans of the popular social networking site Facebook, CEO Mark Zuckerberg said last week that the free ride is now over, as brand names like Coca-Cola and Microsoft were being invited to establish their own profiles to interact with real users. In an effort to turn the 50 million strong user base into an army of viral marketers, the major corporates are being recruited to create their own Facebook profiles, which, just like those of regular users, can include video, photos, announcements, promotions, and even plug-in applications. Effectively, by writing a comment on an advertiser's Facebook wall or publishing a review of its products, the user becomes a so-called trusted referrer. It's not yet clear whether such referrers will receive any form of gratuity from the corporate or from Facebook, or if negative reviews or opinions will be permitted. The announcement comes as the company is under intense pressure to cash in on the wealth of personal data it's collected following a $250 million investment from Microsoft, which valued Facebook at $15 billion.
And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Why do we need translators? This drives me crazy, Graham.
I'll tell you the reason we need translators. Because Microsoft insists on reinventing the wheel.
Video search has become important, you know, with the advent of the digital camera and the fact that just about everybody has one now. You know, there's an enormous amount of image data being created.
Why would you buy an LCD or a plasma and the thing's not even switched on? You can't even see what it looks like.
They're keeping their contrast down.
It probably looks better that way.
Check your media care cards at the door, boys, on the way out. That's therapy for the evening.
ODT does not equal DocX. That's the moral of today's program.
Not by a long shot.
Well, Open Social is a product that Google have created. It basically lets developers create applications for social networks, anything really that accepts the Open Social code.
They have to befriend either one party, don't they? So who is that going to be? Well, we'll find out later on this month now.
A Google phone.
Yeah. Your output of your work is delivered via broadband to your customers.
But that's a special data plan you're on.
Yeah, well, why can't... It's the same... Now you're going to make me check my Medicare card at the door.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, this is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Welcome aboard for yet another evening on the countdown to Christmas. Not long to go now, boys. How are you doing?
Going well. This is turning into a television studio.
It is a bit like that, due to the popularity of the webcast. Is that what you call it these days?
I don't know. It's out of control. That's what it is. I didn't even shave. I should have worn my tuxedo if I know it's going to be on
exactly. We
television.
Had, our television ratings are about to be released. We had 630, I think, people watch in, tune in to us in the last 15 minutes of the podcast last week, so I've gone to the great effort of setting up the camera. Haven't quite got around to getting it completely working yet, so watch the web spot and you'll see it there. Also, who are the boys reading the news on the front tonight? That was very good.
Oh, did you like that?
I did. There's even been an email already from Michael Fields listening to on the stream. It says, hey, joint news broadcast presenters. Cool. So there you go. Your fans are out there already.
We had a little bit of spare time during the week, didn't we, Graham?
You can tell when you're on holidays, Dr. Ron.
Can you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The production quality of the show is, it changes. Whether it goes up or down is yet to be determined, but it changes.
Dear. If nothing else, it's controversial. Hey, interesting week this week. We're going to talk about Telstra very shortly. How can we not after what's gone on in the last, since we were on the radio last time? So stay tuned for that. We've also got a little bit of a search engine optimization, I guess, Yahoo's perspective on things. We had Lyd had a great chat. She's doing the rounds in the US at the moment, as you know. And she's going to have a chat to Yahoo tonight, which would be good. And then the following week, we're going to chat to Google.
It'll be good as a follow-up from last week's Microsoft
Tim Mayer,
installment. Yeah.
Who runs everything Yahoo-wise down the end of her street, because everyone's down the end of her street over there in Silicon Valley. She had a chat with him. So that's interesting. That's coming up this evening. Other than that, correspondence. Anyone got any letters?
Don't have anything this week outstanding.
Nothing outstanding?
No, but log on to the forum, though. forum.techtalkradio.com.au and let us know what you think.
Yep. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au throughout the course of the show tonight, or even after that if you like. Or you can also SMS us whilst we're live on air on 0430 582077. I just want to have a couple of brief chats about a few things across the course of the week that's annoyed me. Firstly, at work, we did the, when I say we did, it's still currently underway, changing from ADSL 1 to ADSL 2 with the same ISP. Now, do you think this would be a simple task?
I know from bitter experience that it can sometimes not be a simple task.
Graham chuckles knowingly.
chuckle, yes. The ISP that I'm with, and I'm not going to name names at this point in time, because in their defence, it's a bit like litigation, and we're still underway. We're still in the courts here, boys. We've put in the big tick, and we said, yes, we'd like to go to, because they sent us an email saying ADSL 2 is now available. Would you like to go? It's faster, cheaper, better, and all that sort of stuff. I said, yeah, why not? You know, how bad can it be? Having come from an ADSL 2 world before with Internode, it was fantastic. But unfortunately, where we are now in Hawthorne, we couldn't get Internode. So we're with another organisation at the moment. And anyway, they said, look, it's a painless experience. You just turn your, you know, leave your equipment on. Don't change any of your settings, your same username, your same password. We'll work and come to work the next morning. Chances are it'll all just be a little bit faster. Said, oh, good. That's just exactly what you want as a consumer. You don't want to be fiddling and carrying on with your equipment and your settings.
Yep.
That was Thursday last week. It's Monday night, as we know. We go live to air on a Monday night and still have no internet at the office.
No internet
since
at all.
Thursday.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. We actually, we do have something. We have a signal, like the ADSL light on the modem is showing that we have sync.
Yep.
The line speed is showing, 12 megabits per second in the downstream and around about 1 megabit per second in the upstream, which is
okay.
Good.
Yep.
And hitting the please connect when you put the username and password in with all the appropriate settings that you normally do on that, it comes back and says, I'm sorry, the remote computer has terminated your connection.
Yes.
No.
No, I'm saying yes, I understand.
Are you familiar with this error message, Graham?
It's
something you see out in the field?
That combination of symptoms suggests that what they've got is the wrong codes on the line, so that
Enigmatic, mysterious,
you're not connected to the
codes on the line.
Yeah, you're not connected to the. You're either not connected to the DSLAM that you think you are, or that your ISP thinks you are, or that DSLAM isn't connected back to the right sort of back end network.
Yeah, there's this thing called authentication. It's a bit like a handshake where you say, "Hi, I'm Dr. Ron, and here's my account, and please connect me." And
that's right.
You know, that process is, we're not getting to that machine to actually do that process.
Yeah, you're probably not talking through no fault of your own. You're probably not able to talk to the right authentication.
Oh, I know, it's no fault of my own, but do you think you can tell someone in support that? Oh, now there's another contentious issue, isn't it?
What have they suggested that you do? Is it something...
Oh, reformat your hard drive, restripe this, put the pin in the back of your modem, just absolutely crucify your settings. I've gone, hang on a minute, buddy. I've got my laptop here. I've got two setups, two unique setups, right? Two different modems, two everything. So I said, no, I'll just unplug the phone line out of the back of one modem, stick it into the back of the other one, and try and connect exactly the same. Different brand modems and all that, because they say, oh, that modem's not compatible with us, and you should have this, and you should have that. I said, listen, I've got two separate situations here, two separate control environments. They both don't work. They're both returning the same message.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll log it as a fault then, shall I? Oh, hooray.
Would you mind? That'd be great.
Look, you know, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? Technology in the office and at home.
One of the most difficult things is as a technically knowledgeable user to get through that first level of the help system at your ISP is the most painful process.
Can you unplug all your fax machines?
Level one.
Yeah, all of that, yeah.
Yeah, turn the lights off. Can you turn the fridge off while you're at it too, please?
Have you got dial tone?
And frequently, the way to do it is to say, can I speak to your supervisor, please? And to explain to the supervisor, I know what I'm doing. I've done all the level one stuff. Let's actually get on and solve this problem.
Mm. Anyway, they got back to me and said, well, when I say they got back to me, they promised me 24 hours. So that's 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'll let you know next week on the show how we go. Let's talk about Telstra, shall we? Have you had any good experiences with Telstra lately? They've been in the news again for all the wrong reasons.
They've been keeping me entertained in the mainstream media.
Really? Why? What's happened?
Well, shareholders, they'd be pretty dark at the moment, I'd be guessing.
Absolutely.
They voted on whether or not Sol should get his proposed salary increase.
They did?
They returned a resounding no.
Now, what sort of it? Just to remind me, his pay increase was what, 3% per year over 4 years or something?
That's right, not unreasonable.
3% is more than that, let me tell you.
No, it was it was 100% over 1 year, wasn't
100,
it?
Exactly, just about. Like they're proposing from his $11 million. And remember, we equated it back to John Howard's salary of $380,000 a year or thereabouts.
Which I don't think is an unreasonable amount for a prime minister to be paid.
No, anyway, Sol's hedging towards 20.
I'm going for the job.
Yeah, sorry, yes.
Well, you got enough spare time. Why don't you? You've got Sol edging towards $20 million at the moment for his salary, and as the shareholder said, we don't think that's quite right. But anyway, 66% of them said, no, we don't think so. And then the board turned around and said, well, you don't know what you're talking about anyway. So, you know, another great...
Thanks for your valuable input, but we'll do what we want to do anyway.
Just in case you're not quite up to it, I'm going to play a piece here which recaps a little bit about what's happened during the course of this week and also about a bit of the bad PR that's floating around in respect to broadband at the moment.
Majority of Telstra shareholders have voted against its controversial remuneration plan. Now, early figures show 65% of votes are against the resolution. The future
Australia's biggest telecommunications company held its annual general meeting in Sydney last week and snubbed 66% of its shareholders when they voted against the company's remuneration report, which recommends a significant increase in salaries for Chief Executive Sol Trujillo and his senior management team.
Hello. I'm Sol Trujillo. This weekend, Telstra has turned on our Next G network.
In what can only be called troubling times for Australia's largest telco, what with service complaints to the Telecommunications Ombudsman at an all-time high, fibre to the node going nowhere fast, and growing shareholder dissatisfaction, why would the Telstra board ignore the wishes of 66% of its 1.6 million strong shareholder base? From an outsider looking in, it appears to be a resounding vote of no confidence in their board of directors. Among those who took offence at the size of the structure of Mr. Trujillo's salary package was the Future Fund, the country's biggest investor, which owns 16.5% of Telstra. But the vote was non-binding, and so Telstra plans to do nothing at all to change the way it rewards its executives. The Future Fund is a vehicle the federal government now uses to invest the superannuation money of its public servants. With $60 billion under management, it's not only the biggest investor in Australia, it's also ranked as one of the top 20 pension funds in the world. It has an independent board of guardians made up of some of the most sophisticated business figures in the country, and its chairman is the former chief executive of the Commonwealth Bank, David Murray. He put out a statement confirming what the market had long suspected, that he and his colleagues had voted against Telstra's remuneration report. He said, "We are obliged to consider the report as a whole and believe that a critical principle in remuneration is that there is a clear alignment between long-term equity-based executive reward and returns to shareholders. We believe this principle is not sufficiently evident in the Telstra arrangements. Given the Future Fund owns 16.5% of the company, you would think its opinion might count for something. Think again." Here's what Charles Masick, the head of Telstra's Remuneration Committee, had to say about the fund's ability to make an informed judgment on the issue.
We have to recognise that the people who are advising institutions, the proxy groups, have no expertise whatsoever. They would not have a single person on their payroll that has any commercial experience in terms of remuneration.
After the meeting, it was clear most of the shareholders found the whole remuneration report far too difficult to comprehend.
I would have always voted against it because I think there's too much money being paid to the wrong people. Huge salaries paid to them with many, many perks, more than anybody really needs. And the money could be better spread throughout the whole company and give all of the people a share of it because they're the ones actually doing the work.
They are overpaid, but there's nothing much we can do about it.
I think they're quite adequate as they are. Seems a tremendous reward for one person.
Well, my husband thinks he deserves a lot. He thinks he's marvellous. And I don't know enough about it to make a judgment. And rather than make the wrong judgment, I didn't make any.
Dad, why did they build the Great Wall of China?
Now, if you're a broadband user who experienced dropouts, slow data speeds and unhelpful help desks, you're not alone.
That was during the time of Emperor Nazi Goring, and it was to keep the rabbits here.
Customer complaints about Telstra and other telecommunications companies have risen sharply. The number of complaints to Australia's telecommunications industry ombudsman jumped about 17% in the business year which has just ended in June. Deirdre O'Donnell is Australia's telecommunications industry ombudsman, and she says many of the complaints her office receives are about internet service.
Not being able to contact your service provider, lengthy wait times, all simple issues that I hope the industry is going to do a better job addressing.
Telstra tells customers who use its high-speed broadband service, Big Pond, that they can do all sorts of things like play video games or watch television. But while Telstra is upbeat about Big Pond, a lot of customers have a problem with it. In the last business year to the end of June, Australia's telecommunications industry ombudsman had more than 7,000 complaints about the service. Telstra's fixed line and mobile phone services were also the subject of thousands of calls. Total complaints about Telstra topped 24,000. The telecommunications industry ombudsman, Deirdre O'Donnell, has attempted to put that number into perspective.
Of course it's of concern to us when we see significant increases. There's no doubt about that, because the customer experience is not a good one, and that's why people come to the Ombudsman.
As well as Telstra, other companies frequently complained about were Dodo Australia, with more than 10,000 complaints, and Hutchison's 3G Australia, with about 7,000.
So I say our role is to hold a mirror up to the industry and to show it what its customers are saying to us. If you want to look at it from a business perspective, it's good business intelligence. Take the TIO data, feed that back into your business systems and processes, and come up with better service for your customers. We also report to our members every quarter on their specific complaint issues, so they get good, strong feedback from us. They know how they've gone quarter to quarter, and they also know how they're going relative to the rest of the industry.
The Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman was established by the federal government in 1993 to investigate complaints about telephone or internet services. And it's not hard to find people with complaints about telecommunications companies.
I think it's got worse by a long way. There's more competition, and because there's more competition, the service has dropped off. The support services are not as good as they used to be.
People with complaints are encouraged to contact their companies first. Then if they get no joy, call the industry ombudsman. I am, you are, we are, Australia.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there you have the lowdown on where we're all at the moment in respect to the big T and all and sundry.
A lot of unhappy campers.
There was, wasn't there?
A lot of complaints there.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because the TIO, if you go to on the web, www.tio.com.au,
Well done.
You'll find they have online all the... They have a quarterly magazine that comes out. You can subscribe to it. I have. I think it's well worth a bit of a look-see, especially for what we do in here. But it's an 8 or 10 page document which can really goes through in detail about all the complaints against TIO members by issue. Now, some of the ISPs, I think they have to be a member of the TIO before they get this information or before they can be complained against and stuff like that. So, yes, there you go. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Andrew McComb in this evening. Graham Callaghan is here as well. Mark Diggins used to be a regular on the show. I haven't seen him for a day or two. He's going to be moving on fairly shortly and returning. He will come back. He's going to go and work and live and harass the people in Boston. So we're going to have another correspondent in the United States.
Another export.
Yes. The Androids are coming. Did you know?
Androids?
Androids?
Androids. Google and their Androids.
No?
Yeah, no, there are. Yes, well, have a listen. Here's this week's View from the Couch. Adam will tell us all about the Androids.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Google has unleashed a killer Android, and it would seem resistance is futile. Android is Google's new Linux-based operating system for mobile phones, to rival Symbian, Windows Mobile, and of course OS X thanks to the iPhone. A few years ago, I would have added Palm OS to that list, but not anymore. There's been talk of a Google phone for a long time. The aim, of course, is to put advertising on the smaller screen, which one assumes would subsidize the cost of the phone and your calls. It will also naturally play nicely with Google's growing stable of location-based services such as Google Maps. The big question is the so-called Google phone still to come, or will Android just assimilate existing hardware manufacturers? Rather than release the definitive Google phone like the iPhone, I'd say Google is more likely to license its OS to manufacturers such as HTC, which makes the iMate and Dopod range of smartphones. HTC has already announced it will release a device running Android in the European market next year. Until now, HTC devices have generally run the clunky Windows Mobile operating system, so Android is yet more bad news for Microsoft. Google will also be quick to release a software developer's kit and will certainly be much easier to deal with than Apple and the iPhone. Apple insists on controlling everything, the hardware, the software, so it refuses to license its operating system to other manufacturers and is very difficult to deal with when you're writing software for their platform. While this improves system stability, it also ensures that Apple remains a niche player. Google knows that hardware is irrelevant. Google also knows the operating system is irrelevant, and even the software is really irrelevant. It's all just a means to an end. Content and services are what it's all about. Android and the concept of the Google phone are just a platform that make it easy for people to consume Google services whilst looking at ads. Nothing else matters. The network is also becoming irrelevant, much to the dismay of telcos such as Telstra, who want to own the customer. As telecommunications becomes commoditized, Telstra doesn't want to just shift ones and zeros, it wants to offer services and content as well. As such, I'd expect to see Android phones available on the Hutchison 3 network before Telstra's next G. As for the iPhone, it might have slick graphics and a touchy-feely interface, but if Android tightly integrates Google services into a mobile device, then it will lay waste to the competition. Steve Jobs may have carried the iPhone down from the Mount Moses style, but I'd say an army that marches behind Android is invincible.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage?
What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters
voters want the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
And you put the date on ePray, it goes, and you get a whole service just on it. How does it go? It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And you might be watching Tech Talk Radio too. Hello there, we'll wave to the webcam. It's refreshing quite well every minute or so. You can see what we're up to in the studio as we speak. Dr. Ron looking at his mobile telephone, looking at a webcam picture. That's very impressive, Dr. Ron. Yeah,
it's making me nervous over there, right. Though. I keep glancing over to make sure it's, you know,
Big Brother.
See what it's pointing at, yeah.
Big Brother in the corner. We need a longer video lead. We can't quite get us all in at the moment, so we'll wave against
it. We need a wide-angle lens too.
Yes, and if you're wondering, the numbers on the bottom of the screen, there's a clock.
Is there?
And it's in GMT time, so it's GMT 09, 49, 59 or something. So Greenwich Mean Time. I could have put in local time, but there might be someone watching us from the other side of the world. techtalkradio.com.au/webcam if you want to have a look. Oh, yes. Oh, scary. There it goes again. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Australians. They want web. They want TV access on their mobiles.
No, not at 50 cents per megabyte. We don't. I'm here to tell you, son.
It's a very valid observation that you make that. And yes, in a bit of respect, you've stolen my thunder.
Oh, sorry about that.
Why don't people want internet? Because of what Dr. Ron said. You got to pay, you got to, you know, chop your left leg off and yes.
Pay through the nose.
Mobile broadband in this country is not what you call cheap, but nonetheless. And that's another thing too. I quite often wonder, like, the difference between, let's say, for example, Hutchison 3, where you get, for $29, you can buy 1 gigabyte of bandwidth. And if you don't use one of their network cards, you can only get 5 megabytes of bandwidth for $10. Like, where's the... it's got to be a business model doing that, not a common sense model, if you ask me.
Strange, isn't it? Yeah. Very strange.
One in two Australians want to access the internet over their mobile phone, while more than a third want to view live television, according to a study. Pity there's no television worth watching, but nonetheless, internet access was the most popular form of content desired by 52% of respondents, followed by live TV. They managed to be 37% of those questioned, and TV clips 31%, while half those surveys want to use their phones to watch the news and check the weather. The most popular content was entertainment news, nominated by 58%. Entertainment news being something like, I guess, what you see Rove does from time to time, you know, that woman who does the news and funny sort of thing, you know, that sort of comedic sort of. It must be what people do on trains, trams, buses, aeroplanes, sitting in airports. While they're having their lunch, waiting in the dentist, they want a bit of a laugh.
They want... Yes.
The other interesting thing too this week, which surprised me a little bit, domain names. They're fairly popular in Australia. In fact, they had a bit of a surge.
That surprised you?
Well, it did actually compared to the rest of the world. It means that we're obviously getting fairly aggressive in marketing our domains or marketing our businesses or marketing anything, I guess, or getting out there in the cyberspace. So the number of .au domain name registrations will hit 1 million very shortly. According to Australia's registry operator. So there you go. Over a million .com. Didn't you have something recently, Dr. Ron, about the millionth website?
That was
TechTalkRadio.mobi, I think.
That
I
was
heard
the
in a promo.
10 billionth website or something,
in the world,
something in the world.
Well, that must have been 10 years ago.
Yeah. So this is names actually registered in the .au domain space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, part of the reason for this will be that the rules changes that have happened in the .au
have they?
Domains.
What changes?
That have happened. Oh, the changes have been progressive and there's nothing terribly recent in the changes, but I think people are taking more advantage of it. In the old days, back when we were first getting going with the internet, there were fairly tight rules on how you could use a .au domain name. It had to be a registered business name or directly derived from it. No, there's other ways. It can be directly related to a product you supply or a trademark that you own
or
a campaign that you're running. Yeah, so they've loosened those up quite a bit.
Yeah, you still need to have an ABN
You still need to have an ABN, but your domain name doesn't have to be your business name or directly connected from it. If you're still selling widgets, you can try and get Widgets R Us
It has to be close to the whatever it is.
It has
selling.
To be
but not related. Literally the domain name or the product name anymore.
No. So you can go out and you can get the domain name to match a campaign that you're running or a service you're providing rather than necessarily...
It's yourfuture.com.au.
That sort of thing.
I got one of those for the state government campaign I did in the not too distant past.
There you go.
I tried to register a .org.au about 8 months ago. They're very difficult. I gave up in the end.
Rules are still quite tight on that, yeah.
Very, very tight. Yeah, it was a family name that I was trying to register, .org.au.
Yeah, you almost have to be a charity or you have your organisational status.
Well, they were doing that type of work and I thought that it would be acceptable and... I bounced.
Well, if they've got the status to some sort of an organisation,
you need a certificate. You do. I've done these. They're very difficult, but you can get them.
Yeah, but you can't just. The point is, you can't just go to a website, can you? And just say, "Oh, I think that's a nice domain name. I'll register that." You do have to be able to actually justify your application.
Too right. Since 2002, the number of commercial.au names has risen by over 750,000. That's not bad, really. And I think a lot of that has to do with protecting your identity online.
Yes.
If you have a good business or you have a business name, one of my customers runs an art gallery and he registered his artgallery.com.au and he actually had registered the .com version of it as well, but he let that lie and didn't renew it. And then all of a sudden, somebody else got it and they put up all sorts of links to other art galleries and things like that.
Ah,
so they sort of stole his thunder. And I guess it's the same thing. It's like registering names which are very similar to yours in case your competitors try and get hold of them. Misspellings and things like that too in a domain name, which means that if the .com.au namespace is a bit easier to use, you can, they're cheap. They're what, $40 for 2 years or something, aren't they?
Not as cheap as the .coms, but they're still fairly cheap.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about search. We had a bit of a chat to Lydia last week about search engines and the likes. This week, we're going to move down the road a little bit in Mountain View, and we're going to Yahoo.
So we're talking about Microsoft last week.
We did.
Live search.
Hugh Williams was online. And a big cheerio to Hugh's dad, who lives locally to us and listens to us on the pod as well. Yes, we had Hugh on the radio show last week, and this week it's time for Yahoo. Next week we'll be talking to Google, and basically Lyd caught up with Tim Mayer, who is basically runs Google's search type sort of thing.
Yahoo's.
Yahoo's, thank you. let me stop getting into trouble and run the interview. Here's Lyd with Tim.
I'm sitting here with Tim Mayer from Yahoo Search. Just generally about the search engine, how's it evolved in the last, 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, and we first had, all search engines looked pretty much the same. You had 10 textual links with some ads, textual ads around those algorithmic listings. And it was very hard to distinguish between the search results. People were typically trying to optimize, trying to, crawl the entire web, get as large an index as possible, and make sure that the best result got up to the top of the page. And that was really what most search engines were focused on. And then sort of the second stage, search engines were trying to really, I guess a consumer way of describing it, trying to read the mind of the consumer and understand what, if the consumer was asking a question, what the answer is for that. Or if you asked about for some information, we would give that information right on the search page. So that was sort of the next phase of search. And some of the examples of that are you put in a ticker symbol for a stock quote, and we give you what the most recent price is, as well as a chart right on the page, where you ask weather San Francisco, and it would give you the weather for the next 3 days right on the search page.
So you don't have to go further. That's just easier for the user.
Yeah, it's easier for the user, and it's giving them what they want very quickly.
Yep.
And then I think the third stage, which we're moving into, is really understanding the user's query and intent even better and understanding from which sources users may be looking for content in. What might be the best source to answer the question? So you might be looking at different verticals, such as local. If you're looking for a restaurant, or you might be have a question where the best answer to the question may come from a video.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be looking to how to do a household task or how to regrip golf clubs, where seeing a video might be a much better answer than something you'd get from a textual search response.
How do you determine what would be the best for the user?
I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, we try and understand, looking at the query, what, you know, based on the content that may be coming back, but also just in terms of, you know, you can look at user behavior to try and understand, you know, are there a lot of queries coming in to new search of this particular kind recently? Are there a lot of things about this topic that are coming through news streams, specifically be reported in the news, and things like that might, those sort of signals might help you understand if some topic is particularly newsworthy and if it's worth giving back news results in response to that type of query.
So it's a constant effort of, you know, watching what's happening and changing to
suit. Especially in the case of news where things are changing so quickly,
yeah.
Right? Whereas if you search for a celebrity, typically, you know, people, or a music artist, right? People, for music artists, we know people typically want things like lyrics, song lyrics. They want to watch videos. They want to listen to music. They want to see concert dates. Those are the sort of things if you type in a music artist. And we see that through logs. We look at what people are searching for on specific topics, and we see what types of things. So, you know, people type in Madonna lyrics or Madonna concerts often, or Madonna videos, like we know those are the sort of things people are looking for most frequently when they search for some music artist.
Now that's interesting you say that, you know, Madonna lyrics, because now the search query is becoming longer.
I think users are becoming more confident with their queries. Search engines are getting better at responding to longer queries. So it has been growing, it grows rather slowly. In the past couple of years it's gone, we see 2.7, 2.8, 2.9, 2.9 words per query on average. But with our new query assist feature, we're seeing a bunch of people typing in longer queries because it tends to help people get to what they want much more quickly by finding the right query.
How important are aesthetics for search?
Well, I think one of the things we've done with the last release is really make our search experience look fundamentally different than before. You know, they'd be on yahoo.com and they would type in the address bar and they'd do a search through the address bar, and then they'd end up on another search engine and they still think they were on Yahoo because the search experience looked so similar they didn't even realize they had switched. So I think they did look, you know, things looked so similar before,
yeah.
But now we've really got a different look than a lot of our competition with just the visual impact as well as the header and the interaction with the search assist. That, you know, when people go somewhere else, they might say, wow, I really missed that search assist feature. Where am I? Right? And then they'll hopefully go to Yahoo and say, oh, this is where I go to get this help.
Tell me about search assist and why it's so much better now.
People don't think they're very good searchers. Even if you get people that are, you know, you look at them, they're reasonably advanced compared to everyone else. And we see the customer satisfaction of search engines is extremely high, typically between 80 and 90%. When they get bad results, they think it's actually their fault for not putting in the right query. They don't think it's the search engine's fault. And search engines typically give bad responses quite a bit of the time. And if there was another product with a similar failure rate, it wouldn't have nearly as high a satisfaction rate. So this is really helping people, you know, find that right query. It helps with misspellings. It helps people that type in something very general.
One of the things that I like about Yahoo is it seems that better able to keep duplicate content out. And I suppose not duplicate, but I suppose the way that you may go to one search engine and you'll get, you know, the first seven results will be from the same place, but just different parts of that place. Whereas you guys seem to be able to say, okay, you've got these 10 options or 8 options or 20, whatever it is, up
yeah.
front. How do you do that?
We have, I mean, there are a couple of things at play. One is we do duplicate detection. That's not, you know, every search engine will try and do that with different, you know, similar or different methods. We have...
And rates of success as well.
Obviously. Right, but we also restrict the number of results that come from a particular host or computer.
What about blogs?
We have sub-daily crawls where we're crawling blogs as well as other news or content that changes very frequently. So, you know, blogs are very important, and, you know, as we move forward, I think freshness and having very fresh content about what's going on now will become increasingly important to integrate news content as well as blogs. Because there are certain topics which are newsworthy in their own right, and newspapers cover them. And then there are other things like an iPhone patch, right?
Yeah.
Which, there's a new patch to the iPhone, that typically isn't covered by any news source.
Yeah.
But it will be all over the blogs, and it will be something that people want to search for, want mm-hmm. to know about. So I think for those sort of breaking topics that aren't, they are newsworthy, but not with the mainstream press.
Mm.
That sort of content will be very important.
Are paid listings included in the results?
Paid listings aren't included anywhere in the search assist. The paid listings are on the search page, and they just match, as usual, with the query.
Is that within the results, or is it beside the results?
It's besides the results.
Okay.
So we typically have all the paid results on the right side. But we have paid inclusion, which isn't sponsored search. It's actually people paying to get their listings, their algorithmic listings, refreshed on a more regular basis.
Okay.
So they get an SLA. So these might be corporations that might want an SLA to say, we want to make sure that you crawl our pages on a 24-hour basis. And these people always also get support. So if they're having technical issues or crawler problems, they can call someone at Yahoo and get support. So largely they're paying for an increased SLA.
Just Yahoo generally, do the same results appear in Australia as they do here in America?
They're actually different. The rankings will be slightly different in Australia than they would be in the US. Australian people tend to want different types of content and more locally targeted results.
Mm-hmm.
So in the US, there are probably a lot of Australian sites I wouldn't be interested in seeing if I typed in pizza restaurants. I wouldn't want a pizza restaurant in Sydney or Melbourne, right?
Yeah.
So we try and target users, and when they're coming from Australia, give them more Australian flavored results.
Tim, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much.
There's a level of ignorance out there which isn't acceptable.
Mm.
Didn't John Howard drop past to get permission to call an election?
What did you use before Next-G for data?
iBurst.
The screen is actually a lot larger than any of the previous iPod models.
We've spoken before about the trade-off between usability and security.
Apple have been accused of an unlawful monopoly.
No, it's not true.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
You know, here we go again.
Tech Talk Radio.
So, yes, I think that's quite valid points, what he makes there about pizzas and things like that. You have to tailor your search engine. But one of the things which stood out for me there, which what Tim was saying, was paid inclusions. Have you come across those before, Dr. Ron, in any of your trawlings?
On Yahoo?
Oh, and anywhere.
On anywhere.
Because I know Google don't do that. If you pay for it, it gets whacked over on the right-hand side or up on the top there.
You can usually... I'm a big Google user, and you can usually differentiate fairly easily between what is a sponsored link or a paid link and what's organic or what's a natural search
result. Unless you're the ACCC, they seem to have some trouble.
They do, don't they?
That's bizarre, isn't it? But I haven't used Yahoo for a long time. Yahoo used to be my search engine of choice many years ago before Google was big.
Absolutely, yes, it was. It was the number one before Google came along.
Mm. Why is that? Why do you reckon they lost their market share?
Google did it better.
Yeah? Because of that?
Purely because Google did it better.
Anyway, there's some good news to finish off the show. We're going to come back very shortly to the website gadget and odd spot of the week.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am.
Residual
powers.
And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
I understand.
Give fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers.
Don't open things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is a new operating system.
Oh, we need another one.
We do. Fedora 8.
Oh.
Has hit the streets.
That's fantastic news. As soon as I finish the podcast, I'll be downloading that.
Are the Androids bringing it?
They might be. Doesn't matter who's bringing it. Just get a hold of it.
Fedora 8 and Androids available now.
And Androids.
Yeah. You weren't listening earlier on in the show.
No, I was. This was Adam's installment.
Sorry, go on.
Fedora 8 was released last week. It features GNOME 2.2.0, which is the desktop application. And CompiS Fusion. Do you know what CompiS Fusion is, Graham?
No, I don't know what that is. What's that about?
I don't know. We'll have to look that one up. Other notable features include a new look and feel called Infinity, better wireless networking, enhanced Bluetooth integration, better laptop operation, and a host of other tweaks and fixes.
Fantastic. I really love Fedora. Fedora, for those who don't know, is the project that took over from the old Red Hat Linux. It's the community version of Red Hat Linux. When Red Hat went entirely on the commercial side, the community free, completely free side became Fedora.
And how much does it cost, Graham?
It costs whatever it costs you to download it over your internet connection. Yeah,
absolutely nothing. Go to...
except on Telstra.
http://fedoraproject.org to download your copy of Fedora 8.
Please, you...
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
I've got a doozy for you this week. This is one of the ones which, you come across from time to time and you go, hey, isn't that good? I better tell my friends about it. For most of us, which I reckon is everyone in this room I know, uses Firefox.
We do.
The browser. Yep. There's one downside of Firefox, and it's not Firefox's fault. It's normally Microsoft's fault. You can't actually see it. Well, some sites just say, no, you've got to see IE or use IE to see a page, Now, what do you do? Normally you cut and paste the URL.
No, I find another link. I refuse.
Okay, well...
But you're telling me I no longer have to refuse.
No, you don't have to refuse. If you go to this website, which is called IEView, there's no W's in front of this.
Okay.
Just IEView, spelt V-I-E-W, .mozdev.org, you'll find a lovely little application, which you download. It's a little plugin that goes into your Firefox. And what it does is it gives you a right-click ability so that when you go to a link in a web page which you have to view in Internet Explorer, or even if you just want to open it in Internet Explorer, you can. You just right click on it and go open in IE, and it just opens the link up into IE.
Yeah.
One right click and away you go. None of this cut and paste and copy and stick it into the other thing. And now that I've been using it for a week or so, I can't live without it. It's really good because if you have to go to some of those sites, or you, as a web developer, you want to see what it looks like in both IE and Firefox.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah,
it's really, really handy. It's just a one right click away. So there you go. I thought that'd be. And if you've got any good gadgets, send them into us, and we'll tell people about it. Because I thought that was an absolute doozy. So
that's your website of the week.
The Tech Talk Radio website of the week is ieview.mozdev.org.
There is a fine line between genius and madness. Showtime.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
An inventor from Fresno in California has been granted a US patent for his straw hat design. His straw hat design uses four solar panels woven into the brim of the hat to power a small fan to cool the head of the wearer. Tommy Nallon is a graduate in electrical engineering and has a keen interest in solar power. He's been designing and building renewable energy products, including wind generation, solar space heating, solar hot water, but above all, solar electrical systems.
Is he going to stop there, or is he going to continue on his
merry
way?
Having had a look at his website, he's going to continue on for many years yet. Would you wear a straw hat with solar panels built in, Graham?
No.
It's a bit like the old Australian, you know, thing with the corks around it, isn't it, to get rid of the blowies?
The bush hat with the corks dangling from the brim.
Yes.
Now, gone are the days of corks. Now we have solar panels and small fans.
Fantastic. Very good. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Newsreaders extraordinaire there, over there on the other side of the panel. You have been watching them on the webcam this evening. That's Dr. Ron on the left-hand side there and Graham on the right. And I'm sort of hiding here behind the microphone on the other side. We did move the camera around, so if you missed it, there you go. We won't be on every week, but nonetheless, it's been fun, hasn't it? We've got four shows to go, I think. We're our last show for this year.
Yeah.
December the 10th. Yeah, that week is our last show for 2007.
Then we're having a summer series.
That's good. I'm glad you said that.
System, won't we? Or one of us will
be. Someone, yeah. Any volunteers? Yeah, good. All right. Once again, thank you very much. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio right around Australia, around the world on the pod and all those sort of things. It's been a lot of fun being in your ears, and we'll do it again next week. So bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, and podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM, Highlands FM and Queer FM in Western Australia. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.